I grin as I open my eyes. You know, that sounds even hotter in your sexy American accent.
Stop it. My accent isn't sexy.
It so is. It turns me on. Especially the last thing you said. Maybe say that again, yeah? She grips me harder.
Your cock is beautiful.
Mm. Yep. Totally hot accent. And that's also my favorite thing you've ever said to me. She squeezes on an upstroke.
Now get your beautiful cock inside me, Griffin.
Scratch that, I say, groaning. That's my new favorite thing. I grab a condom from my wallet, push my jeans down and kick them off. Then I regard her leaning against the door, half-dressed, tits out, lips bruised and bee-stung. I wave the condom at her. This is a problem we need to fix right now. Full nudity is required, Joy. She's topless, but her jeans and heels are still on.
Allow me to rectify the situation.
She unsnaps her jeans and pushes them down. Then, because I'm a gentleman, I kneel and pull them off the rest of the way, helping her step out of them till she's in nothing but a scrap of green lace, because, of course, Joy wears matching lingerie. And it's beautifully, deliciously slippery, wet lace, as I discover when I slide my hand between her legs. Lust jolts my entire body as I feel how slick she is. Even through her useless, pointless knickers, I draw a deep, satisfied breath as I tease my fingers across her. I want to feel this all over me. I want my fingers inside you, my tongue on you, my cock in you. A tremble moves through her body.
Je suis excité.
I blink up at her, surprised she'd used those words correctly. I didn't teach you that, I say with a quirk of my lips. She grins naughtily.
I learned it a while ago. I can finally use it properly.
You use it fucking perfectly, I say as I slide the waistband slowly down her hips. I believe these knickers have done their service. I think it's time we give them a proper goodbye and get them right the fuck off. I tug them down her legs, then leave them on the floor with her clothes. I kiss my way up and she shudders as I travel along her soft skin. And there, at the apex of her thighs, is the paradise I've fantasized about. One trim red landing strip leads to the promised land. My fingers play with the soft curls as I trace a path to her center. Enjoy every day and eat it like a fruit, I say in a low, dirty whisper. Then I press a kiss to her clit, and she makes the sexiest, most sensual sound I've ever heard. An oh that makes my cock twitch, makes me ache even more to be inside her. Her hands fly to my hair, and she yanks me closer, her breath coming in sharp, erratic pants. She rocks against me, and I feel like she's almost there already. The possibility of her coming on my mouth intoxicates me. I flick the tip of my tongue faster, groaning as I lick her, tasting her sweetness, savoring the evidence of her desire. But seconds later, she pushes me away. I give her a look from my spot on the floor. You don't like it? She drags her hand down her breasts.
I like it too much.
I didn't know that was a thing.
It's a thing when you go down on me like that.
I laugh. Like how?
Like you're devouring me.
Fuck. I can't resist her. I press another hot kiss to her clit and then rise.
I want to devour you. I want you inside me.
Well, I can't argue with that, so I grab her, hoist her up on my shoulder. She squeals.
What are you doing?
Wall fucking is great. But I've got a mind to spread you out on the couch by the window. I've wanted to fuck you so the neighbors can see. The shutters are open and a spring breeze wafts in, the curtains fluttering.
Your neighbors are peeping Toms?
I set her down on the grey couch by the window.
Joy, it's Paris. We're all voyeurs here.
She shivers and runs her hand between her breasts.
Then let's give them something to see.
I groan as I watch her touch her belly now.
Including me, I rasp out. I'd like to watch you fuck yourself sometime.
Her eyes darken with lust as her hand slides between her legs, I tear open the condom wrapper as her eyes drift away from me, like she's giving me a private audience into her personal fantasy. Her knees fall open as she touches herself. My chest burns and my body heats to record temperatures. She's the most sensual woman I've ever seen, ever known. I want to just stare at her, to watch her as she pleasures herself. But I know she wants more. I want more. I roll the condom on and kneel on the sofa, tugging her down the cushions, spreading her out, opening her legs. Then I stop. I slap a palm to my forehead. What was I thinking? No one can see us like this. Quickly, I switch us around so I'm seated on the couch and she's on my lap. I tip my forehead to the open window. The view is not much, but at least it's a perfect sightline across the courtyard and into the other flats. Is this better for you? She teases, glancing toward the window. It's better for everyone. But it'd be better for me if you could get on my dick right now. She sucks in a breath as she adjusts her position, straddling me and staring at my erection with rapt attention and glossy eyes. Grabbing the base, I rub the head of my cock against her slickness. She leans her head back and moans, a dirty, gorgeous note like sex and music all at once. I moan too, then curse when she sinks down on me, taking me all the way. With her hands on my chest, she works to find her rhythm. Rising up, grinding down, swiveling her hips. Watching her is pure eroticism. It's like she knows every inch of her body, knows what she wants, knows how to find it, and knows how to use me to get there. With a sway of her hips, a grind of her pelvis, she moves on me in a sensual dance, up and down, and she stays there for a moment, sitting on my cock, sucking in her breath. Raising my hips, I thrust up into her, so wet, so hot, so perfect. She moans my name, wraps her arms around my neck. Don't be gentle with me. Her dirty mouth sends a charge down my spine. It ratchets up the lust rattling through my bones. I won't. I grab her hips, dig my fingers in, and move her on me. I adjust my left hand so my thumb glides across her clit and she gasps. Every sound she makes sends a bolt of desire through my body. I'm burning everywhere, heat flaring over my skin as we fuck by the window. Her mouth falls open, her eyes squeeze shut. Her hair slides down her back and her tits bounce magnificently. Majestically. This is the snapshot of everything I want right now. To have her like this and to be used by her for pleasure. This woman I've spent my days with, spent my evenings with, spent all my words on. This woman I want so much more of. White hot pleasure blasts through me as our bodies grind and thrust. She clutches my shoulders, digging into my neck as I push up. She stares down at us, at the way she rides my cock, how she slides up and down on me. She trembles at the same time as she moans, loud and dirty and hungry. Harder. She said not to be gentle, and if there's one thing I pride myself on, it's making sure a woman gets what she wants. One hand moving to her hair, I grab a fistful of those lush red strands and I tug. Oh God, she yelps, and then she moans, a long lingering sound signaling the end of bliss. Again, she begs. Her voice raspy. I let go of her hips, bring both hands to her hair and my teeth to her neck, nipping her, biting her. She cries out her pleasure, and I rope my fingers in her hair once more, gathering it in my fists. I tug it back, tugging her down harder on me at the same time. Like that, I control her moves, and the exquisite torment on her face tells me she loves it. I meet her eyes. This is better than my fantasies. Do you fantasize about me a lot? Every night. Every morning, all the time. I yank her hair again. Hard, rough, demanding. The way she likes it. She's saying God's name as her eyes squeeze shut, and her lips part in a gorgeous O, and then she's silent for one long, lovely, suspended moment until she cries out. When I hear her orgasm, there's no doubt the neighbors will too. The sound of her passion rattles my own climax free. Pleasure thunders down my spine, barrels into my thighs, and I come. I say her name because it feels like that. Like erotic, filthy, fantastic, can't believe I'm finally having her joy. Eventually, she gets the tour. It lasts all of 30 seconds since this is French real estate after all. It's my mum's sister's flat, so I lease it from her. Aunt Sophie, who was known for giving me the most amazing treats during the holidays, I explain as I show her the minuscule bedroom. Sophie sounds like my kind of relative. She is. Does this mean the Thomas family gets to keep his flat for generations? Yes, it's our prized possession. Something flickers across her eyes when I say that, like a spark of hope. I'm not sure what's on her mind, but honestly, with her naked in my place, it's pretty hard for me to think straight. She spots a framed photo on my bureau of Ethan and me after the race we ran. Her eyes widen and she points. Your brother was good looking. You're not allowed to say that, I say in mock seriousness as I pull her onto the mattress. Oh, come on. You two must have been lady killers. Wait, so you were stark raving mad at me on the street earlier today about item number 2 on his list, and now you want to know if we were tomcats together? She swats me. I did not get mad at you, and I definitely did not turn stark raving mad. Plus, if memory serves, you kissed me right after you told me, so I guess your plan to make me jealous worked. Will it work again? I'm not above doing whatever it takes to get these lips on mine. She shrugs impishly. You'll have to try harder. First, tell me something I don't know about you. I lean back into the pillows, tucking my hands behind my head. I love lunch. Like, fucking adore it. She laughs. Everyone loves lunch. No, seriously. That's not true. People love breakfast or people love dinner. Lunch is the most underrated meal in the world, and I love it. Madly and deeply and truly. She drags her hands through her hair, still tangled up from me. My sister and I used to sneak out for lunch when we could. Sneak out? That's what we called it, at least. Mostly we just met for lunch at In-N-Out Burger. I raise an eyebrow. What's that? Seriously, what's that? You don't know? I shake my head. I presume it's a burger joint. It's only the greatest burger joint in all the land, from coast to coast, sea to shining sea. They also have great milkshakes. Someday, you'll go to the States and you'll understand the joys of In-N-Out Burger. Someday I will, I tell her. Then we talk more, as moonlight filters across the sheets. She tells me about Allison and I tell her more about Ethan. Even though only one of them is alive, somehow the conversation doesn't hurt quite as much as it would have a few months ago. Maybe this is what it feels like to move through grief. You never truly get over the loss of someone you love, but you get by, you get through, you get around. That's why I don't say anything tonight about what comes next for me. Sometimes you just want things to go perfectly. And they do. For the rest of the evening, because we can't keep our hands off each other, and soon enough we're not talking about family, we're talking about each other. I prop my head in my hand. You know we're seeing each other tomorrow, right? At work. And after.
For language lessons?
And for this, I say, running a hand down her hip.
Presumptuous much?
Woman. I have orgasms to give you. Don't deny me.
She tugs me close.
Say it in French.
And I do, whispering dirty, filthy things in her ear as I move her under me and slide into her again.
Je te veux tellement.
I want you so much. She moans.
Say it to me, I command.
She repeats my words.
Je te veux tellement.
Now tell me to fuck you hard. I know you know this one.
Her back bows as she murmurs, Baise-moi fort. I bring her to the edge again, telling her, "Jouis avec moi." Come with me. Soon she does, as the moon shines and Paris sleeps, as we're entwined together at last.
Chapter 23. Joy. One of the things I love most about being a modern woman is we know we can have it all. The job, the family, the kids, the love affair, the great sex. I don't have kids, obviously, but I'd like to think I'm winning on a few of those other points right now. After finishing up in the lab, I grab my phone and tap out a message to my sister. Joy. True, false. It's possible to have your cake and eat it too. Allison. I've never understood that saying. Isn't having it and eating it the same dang thing? You know what I'm saying. Do you believe we can truly have it all? Absolutely. But having it all isn't free, sister. What's the cost? Usually money. Usually you can only have it all if you're rich. But sometimes you can if you're really lucky. I wonder if I could be one of those lucky women. When I leave the office on Friday evening, it feels that way. The job is going well, L'Artisan is thrilled with the work I've been doing, and I feel as if I'm entering a whole new level of success on the job front. Finally, I'm able to move up and use all my skills. I'm at a place where I can thrive and uncover new opportunities. Then there's this city. I walk down the boulevard, threading my way past buildings that have witnessed centuries of lives and battles and loves, past shops that peddle mouth-watering treats, past people who experience the world in a different way than I did mere months ago. The most romantic city on earth is starting to feel like my home. Plus, I'm learning a new language. My tongue forms words and sentences that I'd never have crafted before. Then there's the man I'm meeting tonight, the man I'm head over Jimmy Choo's for. I didn't come to Paris to fall in love, but Paris had other plans for me. After I shower, dry my hair, and slip into a sapphire blue dress that hugs my curves, I toss a wide scarf over my shoulders. I consider the options on my mirrored tray, then go for the caramel and white musk notes in Candy by Prada, spritzing on a tiny amount. I head to Montmartre. Griffin waits for me outside Moulin Rouge, the windmill behind him, the bright red lights somehow making those blue eyes of his even bluer. He says nothing as I walk to him, only stares at me predatorily. How odd that I saw him hours ago when I wore a pencil skirt and white blouse at the office. Now I'm in a clingy dress that he'll strip off later tonight. That's how he looks at me, as if he's already undressed me. I feel naked before his gaze, and it thrills me. When I reach him, he wraps an arm around my waist, dips me, and kisses me. I swoon. There's no other way to describe it. He has me in his arms and he's taking my breath away on the street outside the world's most famous cabaret, and my head is a fantastically static haze. He kisses me like we're in the movies, like this is one of those kisses a photographer will capture, and it'll become a classic black and white photo. Women will post it online with captions like, "I'll have what she's having." And I'm having it, the kind of kiss that makes my head spin, that makes my heart thump, that turns me on from ankles to eyebrows. When at last our lips separate and he pulls me up, I blink at him, sighing contentedly. "You're too much." He laughs.
"I'll assume too much is a good thing."
"Your cake. I'm having you and eating you," I say dopily, because I think I might be high on him.
"So much talk of eating things," he says, running a hand through my hair as his soft lips travel to my neck. "And yet I still need to eat you again and again."
That spark flares through me, and I'm already dangerously wet.
We head inside, taking a seat for the show, where we spend the next hour entertained by dozens upon dozens of women in sequins and feathers, dancing and kicking to bright, bold, and sometimes seductive music. Their sumptuous costumes shimmer on the stage, the cherry reds, glittery golds, and shiny silvers adding to the decadence of the evening. This place is, and has always been, a portal to the hedonistic, an invitation to dance till dawn, to sleep in past noon, to drink and live, and be so very merry. Griffin's hand is on me the whole time, moving from my leg to my hand over my shoulders. As I watch, I exist in a state of heightened awareness. I'm a hummingbird, wings buzzing, waiting to dip my beak into the honey water. When we leave, we wander through the hilly streets of Montmartre, past cafes where the clink of wine glasses and bits of conversation float past my ears. I pick up phrases here and there, crystal clear in my brain for once, and I grab Griffin's arm, my eyes widening. "I'm starting to understand what they're saying," I tell him in French. He smiles and kisses me.
"Your dream is coming true."
My heart flutters. I want to tell him I have new dreams. I want to tell him he's part of them. Something holds me back, though. Maybe it's my own ancient fears, my worries over what happens when you let someone in, how you start to give up the parts of you that matter most. If I'm going to keep giving the most precious real estate in my heart to him, I want to know him more and understand what drives him. We stop in a small park and grab a bench in a quiet corner, away from the Friday night revelry. But before I can ask him what I most want to know, he squeezes my fingers and says,
"I want you to see what's on the list."
I straighten my shoulders, surprised at this sudden declaration, even though it's as if he's read my mind. "You do?" He nods.
"You're important to me. I want you to understand my life and my choices."
His words are heavy, anchored by a weight I don't fully understand. He sighs, rubs a hand over his jaw, and I tense more. Something is on his list that I won't like, and I don't think it's about other women. It's about him. It's about us. I brace myself for hurt. "I want to say you don't have to tell me, but I think I might need to know," I say softly. He swallows and brushes a strand of hair away from my cheek.
"I'm leaving."
My ears ring. My head hurts. A cold, hard echo reverberates in my body like a crash of cymbals. I must have heard him wrong. "What?"
"I'm leaving Paris when the assignment at your company is over."
I blink, and if I were standing, I'd stumble. Instead, my hands curl around the wooden slat of the bench, holding on tight. "You're leaving?" He nods.
"When I go to Indonesia..."
"You're not coming back?"
"I don't think so," he says heavily.
I nod a few times, my brain slowly processing this new input. It's like someone dropped a molecule of bleach into a vanilla-scented perfume.
"Wow."
He rubs his palms along his slacks.
"I'm sorry."
Those words hit me hard. They make me feel like Richard did, responsible for his fate. I paste on a smile. "Don't be sorry. I was just surprised. That's all."
"I should have said something sooner."
Running a hand up my arm, his fingers tiptoe over my shoulder. My body has the audacity to form goosebumps.
"But I had no idea where we were going, or if we were ever going to happen, or really what to say other than that I was going there for the race."
I take a calming breath. "You don't need to clear things with me. This is your life. You need to live it the way that makes sense to you."
"Joy."
His voice is tinged with sadness. "Are you planning to live in Indonesia?" I ask, drawing all my strength. He nods,
For a little while. I've been saving the money to do this. But I'll also travel all around. I've always wanted to.
Like that, understanding lights up my brain, like neon signs flicking on at night. At the museum, he said, I want to go everywhere. At dinner, when he told me about the marathon, his words were, I've always wanted to go there, spend some time wandering around when I'm done. I should have seen this coming. He's been clear enough. I thought he meant he'd take trips, but perhaps I only wanted to believe he would take trips, because they have a beginning and an end. He's never lied to me. I've lied to myself. I've chosen to believe the fairy tale version of falling in love in Paris, not the real one, where I meet a man who has too much wanderlust, a man who's living a life he and his brother plotted, a life only one of them can live now.
Do you want to see the list?
Yes, I say with a gulp, because I need to know what I'm up against. Once upon a time, I believed my own reticence over relationships would be our biggest barrier. Now I know the highest hurdle is one that I can't and won't tear down. It's time, it's space, it's distance. It's family, it's love, it's honor. It is intractable. He takes a piece of paper from his wallet and unfolds it. I hold my breath, waiting. Once he spreads the paper open, it's like seeing a ghost. The handwriting is his brother's. It's a scratchy and uneven scrawl, the penmanship of someone who could barely hold a pen anymore. It breaks my heart. 1. Live in Paris for a year. Check. 2. Sleep with all the French women. Check. 3. Visit Indonesia, run a marathon there, travel across the country, then everywhere. 4. Pack your bags, wander the globe, and eat macarons, or whatever you want because you can since you'll... 5. Have 6-pack abs. You can do it. I was almost there. Hell, show me up and go for an 8-pack. Check. 6. Help someone you care about achieve their dream. 7. Have your caricature drawn in Place du Tertre. Preferably a highly amusing image that would have made me laugh. 8. Sleep under the stars. 9. Take a chance that terrifies you. Check. 10. Drink champagne along the Seine when you bid adieu. P.S. Be nice to Mum and Dad. It's hard for them. I laugh at the same time that a sob works its way up my throat, then escapes. I drop my head in my hands and let a few tears slip down my cheeks. Griffin rubs a hand on my back.
Are you okay?
I nod. It's just sad. I don't mean him leaving, though that is intensely sad. I raise my face, a new tear streaking down. I'm sorry your brother's not here. I'm sorry this happened to him. Griffin dusts his lips over my cheek, kissing away the evidence of my tears.
It's okay. I mean, it's not. But what can you do? Don't cry, sweetheart. I hate to see you sad.
That only makes me want to cry harder. The sweetheart, the endearment, the way my emotions matter to him. But this isn't about me. This is so much bigger than him, than us. This is about a promise to the person you love most, the person you love unconditionally. It's a dying wish to do what someone else can't. Gathering myself, I draw a deep breath, swallowing past the harsh lump in my throat. It's not my loss, it's his, and I'm acting like I own it. I lift my chin, keeping my voice even. Why are some underlined?
Those are the ongoing ones. I should always be nice to Mum and Dad, right?
He says with a smile. Of course, but it's sweet Ethan pointed it out.
He worried about them. And it's not hard to be nice to them, but it's important.
and that's why I try to talk to them often, to stay in touch. And the other one underlined is the one about helping someone achieve their dreams. I guess I'm still a work in progress, I say, a quirk to my lips. He wraps his arm tighter around my shoulder, leans his face to me, brushing his lips against mine.
Yes, I like that you're ongoing. I like that you're not there yet. It means you still need me.
More than you know. I have so much to learn.
I'll get you there.
And then you'll leave. Then you'll take off. But I don't say that. I'm a grown-up, and that's the role I need to play. I fasten on a smile. And then you'll be on your way to Indonesia. You'll do the marathon and travel. Then you'll wander and eat macarons. So that's 3 and 4. He nods.
Which leaves me with 3 left to do here, I suppose.
Sleep under the stars. Why haven't you done that? That seems like something you could do any night.
True, but I don't think that's what it means.
What do you think it means?
We used to make lists of all the places we wanted to go. We had this huge map of the world with pins stuck in future destinations, and we'd say that we'd sleep under the stars if we had to.
His eyes look far away, and he's slipped back to the past, to memories that are bittersweet.
Or if we wanted to, Griffin adds a cheerier note to his voice. We always gave ourselves an out, if we had to, or if we wanted to.
So, it applies to traveling, I say heavily, and it seems many of these items do. But that's who Griffin and his brother were, I'm learning. They were boys bitten with the bug of adventure. Then they became men, unable to pack their bags and take off. And so now, one of them must. I move down the list, running my finger over the caricature one and the champagne item. I know someone who can help you with these final two. He raises an eyebrow playfully.
Oh, do you?
I dance my fingers over my chest. I happen to adore champagne, and I also know a great caricaturist. He laughs heartily.
How on earth do you know a great caricaturist? That's so random.
I wave broadly at the streets in front of us. Hello, Montmartre, Place de Tertre. Elise lives near here, and when I was on my way to her home, I had a drawing done a couple of months ago. I'll take you to see the guy. It'll be fun.
There you go. Done.
He mimes making a check mark. I squint. But I don't understand why you didn't do that one yet. It seems easier.
He shrugs. Maybe because it's easy. I figured I'd tackle the others first. Besides, this was one I knew I could do any time, I suppose.
Part of me desperately wants to believe he hasn't had his caricature done so that he'll have a tether to Paris. I want to believe he loves Paris as wildly as I do, and when the time comes to say goodbye, he won't be able to. The tie to this place will be too strong. But that's a fool's hope. I've been a fool before. I can't do it again. I'll be a rock. That's what I know how to be. This man is teaching me a whole new language. The least I can do is be by his side as he finishes his brother's bucket list. He needs to see this through. It's not my place to hold him back with a heart too full for him. It's my place to help guide him there, a gentle hand on his back, an encouraging word, and a fantastic time before he waves goodbye. Send him off in style, even if it makes my heart ache more than I would like. So much more than I would like. I lace my fingers through his and walk to the nearby square, where charcoal artists draw elongated faces. But it's late, and most have gone for the night.
We'll come back another time, Griffin says,
and a faint kernel of hope dares to take shape inside me, the hope that there will be another time, another chance for us. A ragtag group of musicians plucking away on violins and cellos play a French tune. The words melancholy, but the melody upbeat enough. Griffin takes my hand and spins me, and we dance under the moonlight, the stars winking above us, the old-time music becoming our soundtrack.
Now all this dancing makes me want to do one thing only, he says as the song ends.
What's that?
Make love to you.
Uber has never made it to my place so quickly. In my bed, we speak less than last night. We tease less, too. But here in the dark, as he climbs over me, runs his hands down my naked body and enters me, I don't need words to know what he's feeling. I see it in his eyes, in the intensity of his gaze. I hear it in his sounds, his noises. He hikes up my leg, opening me more, moving in me. He doesn't look away, and it's almost too much. But too much of him is what I want, even if it hurts, even if I know it's ending. When we're like this, tangled together, our bodies slick and hot, our breath wild and erratic, our lips parted, it doesn't feel as if we're counting down. But once we come down from our high, I'm keenly aware that I'm crossing off days on the calendar until the man I'm in love with leaves.
Chapter 24. Griffin. The first time I traveled to Paris, I was 3. My mom took Ethan and me to see where she grew up before she left to live in England. Shockingly, I don't remember a lick of that trip. But the photos are enough to make me shudder. Mom dressed us in pretty little shirts that no child should ever wear. We visited again when I was 6 and Ethan was 5. Apparently we were little shits then. The story goes that we nicked a little Eiffel Tower keychain from a young boy selling them by the carousel near the famous landmark. I've always suspected the story was apocryphal, told at dinner parties by my parents to entertain the guests. But there is a photo of us in front of the tower and my dad wrote a caption on it, "Little Troublemakers." We visited many times over the years, seeing Mum's sister who now lives in Brittany. We'd check out the sights and the famous landmarks and go into the open-air markets. Though I did all that with my family, I also looked elsewhere on those trips. Down alleys, around corners, in the passages, always seeking unknown treasures and odd little curiosities. As a teenager, when I went about the city on my own, I started keeping track of all the unusual things I saw. Level markers, corner guards, antique signs. I was like a surveyor conducting an inventory of Paris, recording all the things that caught my eye. Funny that I never noticed the angels Joy keeps telling me about. I'm still not an angel person. I don't believe they're watching over me, and I definitely don't think my brother is an angel. That's just not how I'm wired. But since Joy mentioned the very first one on the door knocker, I've been intrigued with their presence. Because I'd missed them. Because I failed to notice them on my journeys around Paris. That's why over the next week I researched them online, marking where to find them. When I hop on my bike one afternoon, I ride around the city, visiting a pair in the window of a luxurious mansion, another blowing a horn on the frame of a hotel, and one more in a Japanese garden that came from the remains of a church bombed in Japan during the Second World War. The damaged angel sculpture was sent here as a symbol of peace. I stop at the last one, staring for a long time, as if I can find a special meaning in it. But I don't know what to make of the angels scattered around the city unless it's as simple as this. Each one whispers a story of how Paris came to be. Some offer clues about art and music. Others tell of how the city moved through war and revolution. Still others speak of survival lasting among the wreckage. Maybe that's what links these winged statues. They're a new form of connect the dots in this city. I smile as I hop back on my bike, pleased that I've figured out this little riddle. I'll miss discovering oddities like this, puzzling them together to learn what they mean. I'll miss many things about this city, I realize as I ride along the river. The bread, for starters. I don't know that there has ever been better bread in the entire world. I'll miss the street lamps, the cafes, the sidewalks themselves. I'll miss that everywhere around me there is beauty, even if it's simply in a shop window. I'll miss the people. Marie at the bakery, Julien by the river, even Jean-Paul and his absurd stories. I'll definitely miss Christian and his devil-may-care spirit. Most of all, I will miss the woman I've spent so many hours with over the last few months. As I ride aimlessly along the Seine, I think back to the day many weeks ago when I was ready to take off and explore Indonesia before the marathon, finishing my training on the island. Instead, what frustrated me at the time gave me 3 months with joy. 3 unexpected months I wouldn't ever want to give up. I only wish it were longer. I wish we'd started sooner. I wish it were fair to ask for something from her that I know in my heart is wholly unfair. Even so, there's a part of me that longs to ask Joy what she'll be doing 6 months, maybe 12 months from now. If she might want to somehow make a go of this. But I honestly don't know when I'm coming back or if my journeys will take me elsewhere. Is that even fair? To ask someone to wait for you when you don't know how long you'll be gone? I slow my pace as I near Julien's green store by Notre Dame. Hopping off the bike, I lean the metal frame against the stone wall by the river. He raises his chin and barks at me. Where's your lovely woman? I'd rather look at her pretty face than your ugly mug. Yeah, I'll miss his gruffness, oddly enough. Nice to see you too, I clap him on the shoulder. And to answer your question, I'm taking her out tonight. I'm meeting her friend and she's meeting one of my mates. He huffs, parking a weathered hand on the faded green wood on one side of his stall. She likes you more than you could know. I tilt my head. Why do you say that? You must have charmed her, that's all I can figure. She was here the other day. She was? I smile, picturing Joy here, perusing the wares. She bought some postcards. She asked me questions. How long have I worked here? How I was doing? The grin spreads as I imagine Joy practicing her language skills. Were you nice to her, old man? He scoffs. She was about ready to have a nightcap with me. I laugh, amused. Don't steal my girl. Does she know how much you'll miss her when you do your stupid run in some stupid country that isn't France? Why don't you tell me what you really think? You're a fool. You're extra salty today. You have a woman you love and you want to leave. You're a fool. Love? I ask, narrowing my eyes, surprised at his quick verdict. The woman I love. He waves a hand dismissively. Young people, you don't realize what you have. He's wrong. I do realize it. I see it plain and clear. But there are choices that aren't mine to make. There are promises I made more than a year ago. That day will never fade. What can I do? Anything, just name it. I'll do it for you, I told Ethan when he took his last turn for the worst. The infection had done irreparable damage to major organs and the doctor had just told us there was nothing more they could do. The fighting was over. The infection had won.
You don't have to do anything for me.
Let me, I pleaded, desperate to be his voice, his legs, his last chance.
You want a bucket list?
There was the faintest laugh in his voice.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. You've gone mad. I mean it. We were going to do everything. We had plans. What would you do if you could? I'll do it for you.
You mean it?
I nodded savagely.
Yes, I'll do anything.
Except skydiving. Anything but skydiving. Silently, he watched me for a long moment, studying my eyes as if searching for something in them. He found whatever he was looking for, perhaps the permission to ask me to do what he couldn't. Because then he smiled amidst the tubes and beeping machinery of his hospital room.
Okay, let's do it. One last list.
I scrambled for a pen and paper, and he started to write. The pen wobbled in his weak fingers. My heart splintered and I choked back a tear.
I'll do it.
Ethan shook his head, his grip tightening, harder than I'd seen him hold a pen. The lump thickened in my throat. I need to get some water. I excused myself for a moment, ostensibly to head to the water fountain. Jamming the heel of my hand against my eye, I wiped away the evidence, then returned to his room, and watched as he managed to write it all down. 10 items. And a final postscript. I blink away the harsh memory and gesture to the shelves of books and small note cards. Anything here she wanted? Julien surveys his goods, then taps a note card with a photo of Monet's garden. She liked this picture. She bought it for herself. Maybe she doesn't need you to buy her things. My shoulders tense, his words clang around my head. He's right. He's ridiculously right, but not about buying things. About Joy needing me. She doesn't need me. Not truly. She's independent and capable and bold, and she's learning a whole new language. She won't want to wait for me. I need to excise the idea of even asking her to. Instead, I'll make the most of the last few weeks with her. I buy a few of the small note cards of flowers, grab a pen from Julien, lean against a stone wall by the river, and write a note. But when I look back at my words, I can't say that. I can't ask that. I tuck it into my wallet and write another. An invitation. Ivy climbs the white walls at the back of the 6-room boutique hotel, while songbirds chirp in the night. Music pulses low and sensual, and absinthe flows freely in glasses at this outdoor enclave, a secret nighttime garden that Joy uncovered deep in the heart of the hip Oberkampf district in Paris. It's at the Hotel Particulier 10th, nestled among verdant trees and lush bushes, off a quiet side street with an address nearly impossible to find. Her friend Elise knows the owner. I have the impression Elise knows everyone worth knowing in Paris. So this is the woman who says days should be eaten, I say as we're introduced. So this is the man who so enchanted my friend, she says, her chocolate brown eyes skeptical behind her glasses, almost as if she doesn't quite trust me. Elise has a sisterly protectiveness to her, even though I doubt Joy needs it. She's the kind of woman who can fight her own battles. I tip my forehead to Joy next to me. The enchantment is entirely mutual. Elise raises an eyebrow appreciatively and nods at me. Good. Then you've passed my test for the night. I wipe my hand across my brow. Phew, I was worried. A woman needs a friend to keep her man on his toes. Joy laughs and sets a hand on my arm. By the way, have I told you Elise has been appointed in charge of all the inquisitions in my life? No, I'm in charge of the fun, Elise corrects playfully from atop her towering heels. I suspect they add 4, maybe 5 inches to her height. I also suspect she's the type of woman who could run in heels and never wobble. She has that air about her. Fun? Did someone say fun? I believe that's my middle name. Christian is here. He strides across the patio, stopping next to Joy and Elise. I make the requisite intros and Joy throws her arms around him, hugging him like an old friend, and then to Elise I explain that he's a translator too. French to English? Elise asks my friend. Christian shakes his head. Yes, but no. I specialize in the Scandinavian languages. Elise roams her eyes over his tall, blonde frame. You do look something like a Viking. Christian laughs. It isn't the first time a woman has said that to him. Denmark is my first love. Copenhagen born. A Dane with a British accent. You look like Alexander Skarsgård, and you sound like Tom Hardy. This might very well be fantasy made flesh, Elise says, waving her hand to fan herself. He smiles. Why, yes, I'd love to take you home right now. Joy laughs loudly. And clearly it's time for us to go. Elise shakes her head and pats Joy's shoulder. Don't be silly. I can admire your man's friend and make sure you get drunk on absinthe at the same damn time.
You're a multi-talented woman, Christian says, and Joy and I step back, grabbing a spot on the outdoor couch and ordering absinthe.
Copenhagen is a lovely city, Elise says to Christian. I traveled there a year ago. I took one of those canal tours.
What was your favorite part of the tour? Seeing the palaces? Hearing the stories of all our crown jewels?
Elise chuckles, shaking her head.
Neither. I most enjoyed when the boat glided past a private dock where a very fit, very muscular Danish man was doing handstands naked on the dock.
Christian taps his chin, his expression serious.
Was it right by Newhorn? A little past the outdoor food market?
I believe so, Elise says with a curious smile.
Do you know this gentleman?
Is he the mad naked handstander of Copenhagen?
Mad? No. More like fit, handsome and well hung.
She scrunches her brow.
You've been admiring his package too?
So you were indeed admiring it.
There was a lot to admire, she says with a happy shrug, and Joy nudges me as we watch them like spectators. Christian taps his chest.
That was me.
A laugh bursts from Elise.
What?
Joy turns to me with wide eyes, whispering,
Was that Christian?
I shrug, laughing quietly and listening to Christian's answer.
Well, I suppose it's entirely possible there could be other tall, fit, muscular men who have homes on the water in Copenhagen and do handstands, yoga, and other acrobatics naked in an attempt to entertain the canal tourists with other crown jewels, he says, and Elise laughs.
In fact, I have a few good mates who also engage in this pastime, but there's a good chance it was actually me. Elise whistles.
Then I'm even more pleased to meet the man whose photos are already on my cell phone.
The waiter arrives with our drinks and I thank him, then wrap an arm around Joy and nuzzle her.
Looks like they're getting along without us.
She stretches her neck, inviting me to kiss her more.
That means you can entertain me.
I brush my lips along her throat, kissing up to her chin, along her jawline, and then to her ear.
How do you most like to be entertained?
With your tongue,
she whispers. I groan.
Now you're going to make it so very hard to stay here.
She reaches for our glasses and hands one to me.
Just think how worked up you'll be when we finally leave.
Raising her glass, she takes a drink and murmurs her appreciation. The sound of her pleasure over the drink is sensual and dirty, and turns me on even more.
I'm already worked up.
Her eyes wander down my body and she raises an eyebrow.
Good. Now, think about what it'll be like when we head to my flat. I go upstairs ahead of you, and you find me naked on the rooftop terrace.
We last 30 minutes, and then I make an executive decision. There's not much reason to stay here any longer, when there are tongues that need to be used for entertainment.
Chapter 25. Joy. 84 steps are worth it. For the view, for the June breeze after the last few weeks of rain and chilly nights, and for this possibility. A glass of white, burgundy lace panties, and a cushioned chaise lounge. Soft music floats from my phone, and the lights of the city give me the best art in the world to gaze at while I wait. I don't wait long. I only asked for a few minutes. The door is unlocked, and soon I hear the creak of wood, the groan of the door closing, then footsteps on the stairs leading to the roof. The little hairs on my arms stand on end before he even reaches me. My body hums, and thrills race over my skin. He turns the corner at the top of the steps, and his eyes blaze with a desire I can read even in the dark, even from 10 feet away. I'm the stage, and he's just turned on all the lights. They spotlight me, and tingling awareness and longing prickle across my skin. I'm the peach left on the table, and he's going to take it, bring it to his lips, and bite into it.
A harsh, wild breath dares to escape my lips as he walks over to me. To complete the seduction, I bring the glass of wine to my lips as coolly as I can, steadying it and taking one more drink. He reaches me, so much heat in his blue eyes.
How does it taste?
He's asking about the wine, but there are so many other meanings. Try it. I offer him the glass and he takes it, drinking some down as he sits on the end of the chaise. He hands the glass back to me and I set it on the table. He curls a hand around my ankle. My shoes are still on, slingback black heels. He eyes them, running his fingers over the top of my foot. A pulse beats between my legs as heat pools in my center. Already I'm wet and aching for him. I don't know how I'll go without this kind of sex, this kind of intimacy, this kind of expectation. I'll miss it savagely when he's gone in a few weeks, and I fiercely want more of it already.
Nice red soles, he says, admiring the shoes.
Nice everything, I say to him, since he's fully dressed. Firmly, he presses down on my right ankle, forcing me to drop my leg, to open myself for him. A growl sounds as if it's ripped from his throat as he stares at me. His eyes zero in on my panties.
Look at you, so wet already.
He grasps my other ankle and moves it, positioning the heels of my shoes at the edge of the chaise. My legs are parted for him.
Take your clothes off,
I tell him, but it doesn't sound like a command, more like a desperate plea. He shakes his head at the same time he strips off his shirt in one fast move. I sigh greedily as I admire his skin in the moonlight, the hard planes of his pecs, the grooves of his abs, the six-pack. Thank the Lord for the six-pack. I bow down before its gloriously hard design and shape.
Can't wait anymore.
He bends to the chaise, crawls up it, and tugs off my panties in one swift move. He untangles them from my shoes and tosses them on the terrace. I groan his name like a woman possessed when his tongue flicks across my wetness. I melt under his knowing touch. It's not the first time he's done this to me. I've enjoyed the sight of his face between my legs many nights. I've savored it and come for him. He knows what to do. He knows how to touch me. He licks a lingering line up my center, then presses his hands to my thighs, spreading me open. He makes me vulnerable to him, to the moment, to the pleasure. But that's exactly how I want to be. I want to let go. I want to give in. I've never known sex could be like this. I've never felt intimacy this intensely before. In the past, I've been guarded, cautious, protected the pieces of myself as best as I can. But with Griffin, he can't seem to get enough. He wants so much, craves so deeply, and gives so freely of pleasure. It unlocks something inside me. The way he touches me, the way he talks to me, makes me want to let go. I reach for the lever on the side of the chaise and I lower it, going flat. He murmurs as he presses his whole mouth to me. I cry out. I love when he consumes me. I love when it feels like he's going to lose control from tasting me,